This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
But I think it'll become standardized. You know, if we achieve and the industry achieves what we want, then it'll become just a standard. It'll be a negative for products that aren't being produced in a climate-friendly way within 5 to 10 years.
When we think about greenhouse gas emissions, automobiles, airplanes, and power plants usually figure more prominently than livestock. The methane produced by cow belching, however, is one of the biggest sources of agricultural greenhouse gas emissions. Fortunately, there are some innovations on the horizon that are promising to help reduce the damage of these gassy cows. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to David Messina, the managing director of Ruminate, an Australian-based startup that's hoping to transform the cattle industry. The company's main product is a lab-grown feed additive that's designed to significantly reduce methane emissions in ruminants like cattle and sheep. We discuss the problem that Ruminate is trying to solve, talk about the company's business strategy and hurdles it faces, and take a look at the competitive landscape in the growing feed additive space. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by David Messina. He is the managing director of Ruminate. David, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So explain for our listeners what problem Ruminate is trying to solve. What is your technology and how are you trying to change the world?
We're going after one of the biggest problems in climate at the moment, and that is methane emissions from cattle. It accounts just for that one single issue from 1.2 billion cows, about 4% of total greenhouse gas emissions. We have products that reduce those emissions by a fairly complex process that happens in the stomach or in the rumen of the animal, and we're seeing some really exciting results.
So we've heard a lot about seaweed being the kind of this new silver bullet that can reduce methane emissions through a cow's burps being reduced by this additive. But I've also read that growing this amount of seaweed might not be scalable. So Ruminate is trying to solve that problem by doing it chemically. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. The exact same bioactive that is found in the seaweed, we actually take that product, we manufacture it and we stabilize it in our laboratory. And then we produce a product in a pharmaceutical manufacturing process. So instead of having to grow the organic product or the seaweed, we're actually able to manufacture and stabilize our product, which means, like any factory, you can scale it up very quickly. And the faster you can scale it and the easier it is to scale, the cheaper the product is.
And I realize you're in testing, but what kind of percentage are we talking about as an additive in terms of a cow's daily intake? Is this going to be just a little bit of a sprinkling in there, or is it a significant portion of their diet in terms of what you've seen so far in tests?
To get some concept of it, it is more like a sprinkling. It's a very small amount that's added to as a feed supplement in what the animal eats every day. And we actually have several products available to us. So we have a powdered product, which we're very excited about and is probably our lead product at the moment. We have an oil-based product, so that can go around feed or in feed. We have a product that we are very excited about that we can deliver in water to the animal, so when it's drinking. So that looks very exciting. And our fourth stream is actually a slow-release tablet that goes into the rumen and can last, 6+ months. So that's something that may only need to be applied once or twice a year. So these four product streams that we're working on, we're confident one of those will fit into most systems that we're looking at around the world.
I don't know how it would work in other markets, but I imagine with the FDA in the U.S., one of the drawbacks of creating a laboratory product as opposed to just, if you wanted to just add seaweed that you get from the ocean, is you have to jump through some more regulatory hurdles. Is that correct?
Yes, of course. And look, that is the case in every country. Unfortunately, the unique situation in the US is the product is treated as a veterinary product. As a result of that, it has to go through the FDA, which is 5 years plus, quite an extensive process. In almost every other jurisdiction in the world, it's treated as a feed additive. So the timing is about half to get that product to market. So we do see a really unfortunate situation in your backyard where we've got this great technology coming through, and other companies have good technology coming through as well in this methane reduction space in ruminants. And we all have to go through quite an extensive FDA process, which is not required in any other country around the world. So it's the obviously we have new products coming through all the time in any industry. Ag is probably a little slower than most, and the volume is probably a little lower. And what we have here is a classic situation where the regulators and the regulation is actually not fit for purpose for these new products coming through. So we do have a bit of work to do in the United States to try and customize and change that some of those regulations so we can get these products into the market, still through a very rigorous process, of course. Other countries, including Europe, have a very well-established pathway to market for feed additives, including ones that reduce methane production in ruminants. We're just not quite seeing, unfortunately, the US at that same stage yet.
So when you talk about the regulatory hurdles, does that include the importation of meat? I know in Japan, they import a lot of Australian beef, or the U.S. imports a lot of New Zealand lamb products. Are these products also going to be under scrutiny for the additives that those countries are putting into their food systems, or is this unique to a cattle owner's jurisdiction in that country? Does it translate into the importation of the food as well, I guess is the question.
Look, inevitably, whatever product you are feeding livestock that then get exported into a whole range of different countries, including those ones you talked about, there is a whole process for the seller in this particular case, or the exporter, to demonstrate that through the life of the animal, obviously it's been treated well. There hasn't been any adverse products fed to the animal or given to the animal at any stage during its life cycle. So our product and others will go through that same process and same level of scrutiny as they all should.
Let's talk about the methane reduction levels from your product. What are you seeing thus far in your tests?
In vitro tests, so these are the ones that we do in the laboratory, we're seeing 95% plus. In animal tests, we're seeing, up to certainly that level. But realistically, in the field, it is going to be lower when you get into a larger scale and more animals and a less controlled environment. But it is still going to be material. We've seen results in the field up to 85%. We're not expecting to see that on a day-in, day-out basis, when we get into large scale. Which is the next stage for us. In early next year, we expected to be doing large-scale farm trials across ranches and farms in Australia, New Zealand. Brazil is probably next. We've got trials starting in the EU next year. We've got trials in the US already, the timing in the US will be slightly slower for that those reasons I described earlier on. Material reductions. The bioactive is very effective, and because we are actually manufacturing this product, we know exactly how much goes into every gram of product and how much then goes into every animal. So it's very precise dosing, and that means our results are a bit more consistent than what you may see from an organic product. And we're also able, as I mentioned, to deliver it in many different formats, an oil or a solid or a slow release product, or a water soluble product. So that manufacturing process gives us a lot of advantages and then more consistent results. But they still vary. So you mentioned 10 to 90%, I think. So the lower quality feed that the animal is eating, in simple terms, produces more methane. It's working harder. You know, the stomach is working much harder to break the product down. That produces more methane. Very high quality feed, the cows produce less. So the range is we see everywhere. Perhaps not quite that broad with our product because they're a little bit more consistent, but there is an enormous range, even between animals.
Calling all cows.
Moo.
Moo. Calling all cows.
Moo.
Moo. Come in, cows. Come in.
Moo. Moo.
We need you now.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to David Messina. He is the managing director of Ruminate. That's R-U-M-I-N and then the number 8. So, David, let's take a step back. At the outset of our conversation, you mentioned how big a problem methane emissions are in cattle and ruminants around the globe. Can you give our listeners a better idea of how big an issue it is and how it is linked to climate change crisis?
Domesticated cattle and sheep and goats, all ruminants, you know, have been part of our lives for thousands of years, and in different cultures, form a very important part of society and in fact part of the family, and a very important part of producing food, and you know, by ploughing or a whole range of other things. So over thousands of years, we have continued to domesticate what were wild animals at one point in time. What wasn't terribly taken into consideration as we were breeding these animals is how much methane they produced. And because it just simply wasn't measured and it wasn't obvious until quite recently. Interestingly, the early work that was done on methane two or three decades ago was focused on taking this 10 to 12% lost energy in methane burps, essentially, and try and turn that into more production in the animals. And so there was quite a bit of research done for completely different reasons 20 or 30 years ago, recognising that this methane was being produced and it was as a loss, you know, to the animal, essentially. So there's some really good early work done with a focus on trying to turn that into productivity rather than being necessarily too focused on the climate at the time. If we fast forward to where we are today, or the last 10 years, massive focus on climate, obviously a recognition that this lost energy and lost methane from ruminants not only is a lost productivity, but critically, you know, it has a negative impact on climate. And so the focus is, and the research has gone back, frankly, to where it was left off 20 or 30 years ago. But the focus now is not only about trying to improve productivity, because we are seeing productivity gains, which is exciting in itself, but more importantly, when we have our focus on climate now. So if you can imagine a cow produces roughly about as many emissions as an average size car, then you start to get an understanding of over a billion cows in the world is equivalent to over a billion cars. So it really is important that we find these solutions. And we have, you know, us and there'll be other companies coming up with solutions as well, where we can materially reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And I think the real opportunity that is often lost is methane is much, in a short period of time, in 10 or 20 years, it is much more potent to the environment than carbon. So if we target methane production from, and we're tugging at cattle, obviously, but there are many other industries that produce methane, and it's exactly the same story. If we can reduce methane emissions globally by 60 or 70% over the next 10 years, it actually buys us 20 or 30 years just because of the multiplication effect of methane itself. So we have a real opportunity to get in front of methane. It in the short term, it'll buy us time for all those other solutions to be coming through the system in their various forms and all that technology, because reducing methane in cattle, you take out product and literally within hours it's producing less methane. It's like an off switch. So the impact is immediate, and there's not many other solutions for any other climate-related products in agriculture, but even across the board, that have that immediate impact on. And then you have this multiplication effect, of course, where it's 20, 30, 40, 50 times more powerful than CO2 that we can take out of the system.
Let's talk about the vast undertaking of trying to distribute this product across, you mentioned Brazil, Australia, New Zealand, but I was surprised to see that by far the largest cattle-owning country in the world is India. I imagine a more fragmented industry, and there's probably a wide range of incomes and socioeconomic levels vary quite widely, I imagine, in that country. So how does Ruminate and its competitors crack a market like India, and how do you hope to be the Johnny Appleseed, so to speak, of feed additives for cattle across the planet?
Well, I can only talk about what the strategies that we're looking at. We've been very fortunate that about 6 months ago, the Breakthrough Energy Group invested in Ruminate alongside Prelude Ventures.
And for our listeners, the Breakthrough Energy Group is Bill Gates' venture group, correct?
Thank you. Yes, it is. And the mandates of both those Tier 1 climate funds is to reduce emissions. So we're looking at trying to get product to market as in an affordable and scalable way as fast as possible. That is the mandate. So what we're looking to do is actually partner with existing infrastructure and existing people and existing companies rather than rebuild a massive animal health company, which will take three or four times longer than this partnership approach that we're taking. So we're not looking to duplicate infrastructure, and that includes the US, Brazil, India, Europe. We're looking to work with Tier 1 existing partners in each of those regions so we can get product to market as fast as possible with people that farmers trust. The logistics has been resolved many, many years ago. Production capacity, all those things already exist. So when you look through that lens, then our target for 2030 is 100 million cattle. That's our mission. Around the world to be treated with Ruminate product, and we're very focused on making sure that happens. I guess to answer the second part of your question, when you look at regions like India and Africa, you know, the cow is a very important part of the culture. It's a very important part of the family. They're not necessarily domesticated for consumption. They play many, many other, in fact, in some cases, the opposite. So we need to find solutions for those regions. Massive, massive cattle numbers, less ability to pay, clearly. So we think there's opportunities to actually provide another revenue stream into those families because carbon credits become available for these products. And if we're smart, we can get the products into these regions and potentially generate another carbon, another revenue stream through carbon credits.
And that would be through those local governments, or would that be through an international carbon credit accreditation body?
No, that all of these processes need to be registered at an international level. That's generally where the buyer is, you know, in a simple term. So an internationally accredited system for each of our products is a critical path to the value proposition to all farmers that that use our product.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to David Messina. He is the managing director of Ruminate. Give us an idea of how farmers are accepting or rejecting the concept. How aware of the methane emissions issue are they? And if you can generalize, obviously, and what's the financial incentive for them? Can we make this attractive for them in the short term?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the challenges we have right now is we have the value of carbon credits, you know, ranging from $30 per tonne to, £90 per tonne in the UK, for example, and approximately 90 euros per tonne. So massive range in the value of carbon credits. So the value proposition in Europe, for example, is very different. It's very positive straight away. If we look at the US, which is closer to $30 rather than 90 euros or pounds, then the value proposition is different. The equation looks very different. Now, I think over time we'll see those markets starting to equalise and get closer together. In the interim, however, it's the other areas that we talk about when we're talking about value is certainly productivity gains is looking really interesting. Obviously, if we can, if the animal can grow faster or to grow on less feed because the efficiency, the conversion efficiency of the feed has gone up as a result of not losing methane, as much methane, then that's very positive. We've got market premiums that are being paid already, both at a meat level and also at a dairy level, you know, for milk. Lots of examples, almost in every country, in fact. The milk industry seems to be further ahead of this than the beef industry, where they're paying a few cents more per litre. Anywhere where the market is closer to the producer, like milk is obviously very direct, then the market signals happen much faster than maybe a beef producer, which may go to two or three different processing before it ends up on the shelf.
Yeah, speaking of marketing, do you think there's a chance for a premium to be built up for a consumer, sort of like grass-fed beef, that this is methane-reduced beef, et cetera?
Look, I think in certain markets, developed markets, developed countries, yes, where there's a willingness to pay for those products. And we saw that with, you know, some of the alternates to meat as well. You know, absolutely where you've got people who have an ability to pay, but not everywhere is like that, clearly. So we can't rely on that to as a pull-through necessarily in a long-term basis. But in the short term, yes, those countries that have more disposable income and can make those choices. We're seeing some premiums on the shelf and people are certainly paying for those. But I think it'll become standardised. You know, if we achieve and the industry achieves what we want, then it'll become just a standard. It'll be a negative for products that aren't being produced in a climate-friendly way within 5 to 10 years.
So without tooting the horn of your competitors, David, maybe you could give us at least a lay of the land, the competitive landscape. What excites you beyond just your own product? You mentioned that your goal in 10 years or in 7 years is to get 100 million animals to use your product, but that's just still 10% at best of global cattle numbers. If you can give listeners an idea of some of the other products out there that are in the works.
Yes, of course. So there's a product a couple of years ahead of us by a company called DSM. It's another product that's produced in a manufacturing process, 3-NOP. So that looks very good as well. Precise dosing, etc. Not quite as good on the efficacy side, with 30 to 40% reductions, but still exciting and obviously in the market in some countries already, not in the US, unfortunately, because it's 2 or 3 years behind, as I mentioned earlier on.
That also needs FDA approval. That's similar to the bromoform additive that ruminate is. You need to go through a process. It's not just adding like a vegetable or something to an animal's feed.
No, look, and just even on the organic product side, which is the seaweed, in almost all countries that has to get registered because they're agnostic to the delivery mechanism in most countries. It's the compound that's obviously doing the heavy lifting that that you're actually registering, not the carrier, if you like. So not a powdered product like ours or not the seaweed product like the seaweed guys are doing, or and in the case of the DSM product, the same. It's you know, it's the compound itself that rightly so needs to be reviewed and scrutinised and go through a process. And look, there's a number of other organic products coming through the system as well.
Are they all kind of based on seaweed as the silver bullet, or no?
No, there's some essential oils and garlic and various other extracts from certain things in mixtures. They are the efficacy is lower, and inevitably the cost is a bit higher. But we need a whole range of alternatives, and I'm absolutely no doubt that there's a bunch more compounds behind us as well. In fact, we need them. So hopefully, over the next few years, we'll be starting to see those come through as well.
He's the managing director of Ruminate, that's R-U-M-I-N-8, the number 8, David Messina. David, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Thanks very much. It's been my pleasure, and I look forward to speaking to you again shortly.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Les Paul, The Wiggles, and Foo Fighters. To read a transcript of this show, go to seachangeradio.com. Stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast on our site or visit our archives to hear from Doris Kearns Goodwin, Gavin Newsom, Stuart Brand, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.